We are in Champions League. We are in Champions League, man.
And welcome to It's an Arsenal Thing. I'm your host Tom, and I'm in the company once again of the one and the only Silent Dave Hutchinson. Ooh, brace yourself, podders. We are here to ease you through these dark, dank times. Look at me as your therapist. My couch is just over there. Go recline. Dave, you can be the window cleaner. How are you doing, podders? Disappointment is a bitter pill and tastes like the unwashed gonads of a heavily burdened goat. Yuck. Dave's been licking his wounds. I didn't actually realise you could get your leg that high, Dave. Very flexible, sir. Were you a frustrated gymnast in a former life? Were you on the rings? There's a gag in there somewhere if you look for it. Are you still in the doldrums? Shallow nodding without much effort. Pretty much like the team at the Etihad. The podcast is brought to you by Manscaped.com and the Performance Package 4.0 for the best above and below the waist grooming experience. And also Zenith coins for the ultimate quality coin collectibles. Officially recognised products by Arsenal Football Club. Stick around, we'll give you a discount code of 20 and 15% respectively for both of those excellent products later in the pod. On the menu tonight, we reluctantly go over the annihilation at the Etihad, and we cover the visit of Frank Lampard's fallen multi-million pound 8.5 year Warriors. We also mull over the second leg of the Champions League clash against two-time champions Wolfsburg. What a match that was. 60,000 plus. That's how you do it. You don't have to go on bended knees begging your supporters to turn up. We just do it. It was disappointing and frustrating, but what a hell of a match. We'll be covering that a little bit later on. Right, let's have a bit of preamble about the City game. So we went to a pub called the Royal Oak in River to watch the match, and right under the TV there were a group of lads. One went to the bar and shouts out, cherries and berries, Jeff. I thought immediately, who do these support? I hope they're not Arsenal fans. Well, it turns out that one was a Spuds fan and the other four were United fans. Sad sacks. Didn't really surprise me though, seeing as they were only 285 miles away from Old Trafford. Why would you do that? That's the question. Not even involved in the game. Cheering on your neighbours. Your more successful neighbours, I might add. If only I'd taken a cattle prod or a boxing glove on a long stick, I'd have interrupted the celebrations.
It's an Arsenal thing, it's an Arsenal thing. Believe it or not, it's an Arsenal thing. With football and transfers, you know who you'll bring. You're listening to It's an Arsenal Thing.
Elsewhere, it's been announced there will be a train strike on the day of the FA Cup final between Manchester City and Manchester United, which at least gives City a legitimate excuse for not filling up their part of the ground. It is bitchy, but it's true. Ooh, we saw the return of the half and half scarf. It was back at the Etihad. One side City, the other side Arsenal, worn by a shallow, non-committed football prostitute wearing a so-called knitted collectible that makes real footballers want to strangle him to death. If he's your friend, disown him. If he's your husband, divorce him. If he works for you, get rid. And if he comes into your pub, only allow him in if he's with a sensible adult. Proof is required.
Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard. Odegaard! Odegaard! He's the captain of the Arsenal and they call him Odegaard!
He's back! Captain Bung, Sam Allardyce, will be parking the bus in Yorkshire for at least four games and the not-so-insignificant sum of £500,000 plus a £1 million bonus to keep them out of the Championship. Whenever there's a club in a relegation predicament, someone always presses the fire alarm for Fireman Sam.
When he hears that fire alarm, Sam is always cool and calm.
We'll be there to help you out. So move aside, make way for Fireman Sam. Soccer AM had a rather unhealthy obsession with the size of Sam Allardyce's bonce, but they caught up with him to finally measure it. The top of the head to his chin was 26 inches. Around the head, the circumference, that's what they call it, 23 inches, which you'd have to say was fairly ordinary. So they came up with the scientific conclusion that Allardyce just had a big face. He has. It's massive. It's like, I don't know, it's like a wok.
Sam Allardyce here. Of course I've got a massive head. What do you want for £500,000 plus £1 million bonus? Someone with a small head. Forget it. If you want someone with a small head, try Jose Mourinho. It's like a pimple on an elephant's ass. It's like a pea on a brick. It's like a barnacle on a barge. Ka-ching!
Now, my favourite match, Arsenal v Chelsea, was October 23, 1999. Chelsea 2, Arsenal 3. Arsenal and Chelsea continued to enjoy their tit-for-tat battle well into 1999. It was there that Arsenal travelled to Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea had yet to concede a goal all season. Both sides traded blows and created plenty of chances. But there was only one man this game belonged to. Nwankwo Kanu was a surprise selection ahead of Dennis Bergkamp for one of the biggest games of the season. Tor Andre Flo and Dan Petrescu put Chelsea 2-0, and the Blues looked like they were coasting to victory. Thierry Henry was introduced in the 62nd minute for Freddie Ljungberg as Arsene Wenger set about trying to get something from the game. Kanu's first two were predatory strikes, but his third was simply out of this world, and it's well worth enjoying again and again and again. You can find that on YouTube. Just tap into your search bar, Kanu Believe It. Prior to the match, Arsenal have won 5 of their past 6 meetings in all competitions, with the exception being a 2-0 Premier League defeat at the Emirates Stadium in August 2021. The Gunners can beat Chelsea in 3 consecutive league games for the first time since 2003 to 2004. Arsenal are enduring a 4-match winless run, drawn 3, lost 1. Their only other top-flight streak without a victory under Mikel Arteta spanned 7 games from November to December 2020. They've dropped points in 7 of their past 14 league fixtures, in contrast to just 3 of their opening 19 in the season. Chelsea have lost all 5 league... Chelsea have lost all 5 league and cup matches since Frank Lampard returned as manager. It's their longest losing streak since a run of 6 from October to November 1993. You shouldn't mock, should you? You shouldn't. Their only goal in the past 7 games was a deflected shot by Conor Gallagher versus Brighton. Lampard is winless in 15 competitive fixtures, losing the last 9 since Everton's 3-0 Premier League home victory against Crystal Palace in October. It's 13 defeats in 32 league matches for the Blues this season. They've only once lost more in a 20-team Premier League campaign, with 15 defeats, and that was in 1997-98. Hopefully relegation is coming your way. Oh, Frank, don't leave. We love you, Frank. Stay put.
It's time to enter the gunroom for a natter.
Hi, welcome to the gunroom. Oh, what a mixed bag. It's not boring being an Arsenal fan, is it, really? You know, it just puts you through the mill, doesn't it? Let's introduce you, Podders, to the usual panel. It's Lauren. How are you, Lauren? Are your nerves calm after the girls' game?
Yeah, they're broken anyway, but what a game it was. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to go into a bit more detail, but, it's a tough time to be an Arsenal fan.
It was an amazing game, but as you say, we'll get into it. Paul, how are you? The Mac is back.
How am I?
On the shirt, by the way? What are you hiding there?
It's the Everson 85 Cup Winners T-shirt.
Hey, was that last time I won something?
Very close, yeah. Last time I was in 95, the FA Cup final. But
kick
yeah,
a man when he's down.
I know. I just like to be reminded of the times when we're actually the best team in Europe. But it's all that keeps you going, really. But how am I generally, football-wise? Dejected, despondent, disillusioned, depressed. How many other adjectives do you want? But we live on.
Well, we could do with another 37. I mean, it's fine. Leave it there. But I know what you mean. I mean, it's a tough old gig down there, isn't it? I mean, if it's tight at the top, it's tough at the bottom. And it's fascinating. The last few seasons, you just don't know what the outcome's going to be. At least
with the title race this year, sorry, Paul, interrupting you with your tea and your misery, but at least the title race is a title race. You know, it's not over in December and someone's running away with it and all that nonsense. And I think there's a few twists and turns. Let's just have a little look on the phone before we get going. Still 0-0, but Lauren's going to keep us up to speed with City versus West Ham. Mm-hmm. And they could do us a favour. I've always fancied West Ham to do something. Right. Well, Podders, we've got so much in this show. It's absolutely brimming and bulging. You're with us for the next hour or so. Let's start off with our missing podcast family member. Jay is in New York. It's his birthday. So happy birthday, mate. All the best from the podcast team.
Happy birthday, Jay.
Yeah, he's swanning it up, eh? I don't know whether he paid for it or as a treat or whatever, but I'm sure he's having a fat time. It was David Rowcastle's birthday, May 2nd. Just gone, obviously, because we're recording now. I think he was 56, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound about right? Something like that. And congratulations to Tony Adams, Mr. Arsenal, inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame. So well done, Big Tone. Lauren's going to have, as I said, one eye on the West Ham game against Manchester City. So feel free to break in, Lauren, at any point. Just ease yourself in nicely with whatever's going on. Lots to crack on with over the next hour or so, as I said, including the satisfying win at Chelsea. We do like beating the chaps. The depressing defeat against Manchester City. But first, the dramatic last-minute loss in injury time by the girls in the second leg of the Champions League semi-final against Wolfsburg. Brief, Tom. That was a sentence. In a way, Lauren, we've exceeded expectations in the competition because of these injuries, key injuries to key players. We'll add some detail, but the game, the performance is right up there with anything we've seen this season from the girls, even fully fit, and the guys. Put you through the shredder, though, didn't it?
It was a long afternoon, for a long evening for sure, but it was one of the best games of football I've watched all season. You know, obviously we had the game against Lyon in the group stages where we exceeded expectations and we came out to who, Paul? Oh, okay. 1-0 to City. 1-0 to City.
Oh, no. Is it the robot? Is it the robot again?
I'll find out for you.
It hasn't come up for me yet.
Nathan Ake.
Stop.
He's back. Anyway, Lauren, the game. Wolfsburg were a bit of a bogey team for us. We came up against them 10 years ago in the same competition. But interestingly, just for a kind of a little background fact, Podders, 10 years ago when we played them, the crowd was 1,400. The game that we just played is over 60,000 at the Emirates. Sellout crowd. Amazing stuff. So thumbs up to the supporters. They really did get behind. 2-2 from the first leg. Arsenal had the home advantage and a superb crowd, as we said. But you couldn't really write Wolfsburg off, could you? Because they are a quality side with plenty of experience in top competitions. Going into this, what were your thoughts with all the injuries that we've had, Lauren?
Yeah, it was definitely going to be a tough one. Obviously, we had the home advantage, selling out the Emirates as well. You know, you could see from the players, I mean, the excitement around the game, everyone was talking about it, everyone was looking forward to it. But, you know, as you said, you can't write Wolfsburg off. They're a quality team. They're really, really good. They're 2 times Champions League winners. And, you know, coming into this game as well, a player that they were missing in the first leg was Pop, and you probably recognize that name from the Euros last year. She's German, she's their captain, an absolutely sensational player. And I think as soon as she was coming back into the squad, I think questions were starting to be raised, you know, just because of the lack of depth within the Arsenal squad. We're running pretty tight. If there was to be another injury, and there was on the day, how are we going to be able to cope, you know, and with tired legs as well? Really, we are running thin in terms of squad depth. I think there was two senior players on the bench and the rest were all academy players. So it just shows you the battle that we're going up against. It was a tough game. Obviously, the first leg had left everyone very, very hopeful, and there was a lot to fight for. And you could see that from the first minute of the game. There was a lot of emotion behind it, and it was a great one to watch.
Try and sum up the brilliance of this performance, because if you haven't seen it, go onto YouTube. They've got the highlights, obviously, but if you should have seen it live. Naughty Podders not tuning in. I know it was on DAZN, wasn't it? But I had a bit of a naughty stream, so we won't talk about that. We won't give too many details away. It was an epic effort, and to get kicked in, we'll go into detail, as I said, but to get kicked at the last minute, let's just go through the team.
Yeah, perfect. So we had Zinsberger starting in goal. Obviously, the back four is pretty compromised with Lee Williamson being out. A lot of, defensive players are out. So we had Ruben Moy, Jen Beattie, who's come in, and Raffaella were playing a back three kind of situation. I suppose the wing backs, we had Maritz and Steph Catley was back in the squad, which was a great bonus to have. She's, a phenomenal experienced player. Manum and Valti were in midfield. Palova was starting on the right wing. McCabe, who captained the team, was on the left wing. And then we had Blackstinius up top on striker. So yeah, I mean, look, the team itself was pretty decent, you can't complain there, but it was just the lack of depth and experience that we had on the bench, which I think cost us in the end.
I think that's what you gain from looking at, you can't see it, Podders, I can, but looking at this list, you just think, ooh, it's solid, but it's just holes where those other players would have been, and that would have made the difference. From the kickoff, you knew it was going to be a special game, and it took only 11 minutes to open our account. Blackstinius, I thought she had a belter of a game. She was brilliant. But take us through that first goal, Lauren.
She was exceptional that game. And I think the ball came from Katie McCabe winning it back just in her own half. I believe it was Palova who set Blackstinius up. And there was a bit of a mix up at the back between the central defender and the goalkeeper. Blackstinius kept her cool. She was able to convert the chance in the end. It was a bit of a bluff from Wolfsburg. But, playing against teams like that, we've seen it against City. We've seen it against those really, really top European teams. Sometimes you need a bit of fortune to get ahead and to, propel you to start the game correctly and to start off on the right foot. And that's exactly what happened there.
If the defender had kind of played differently, because kind of the mix-up was so classic, that Blackstinius just popped through the pair of them. It was excellent. So that got us going. VAR checked it, but there was nothing found. Oh, for a foul? I was like, where? Where was the foul? Where was the contact? But we have more to say about that, because there's loads of spurious referee and VAR decisions coming up.
It was one of the worst refereeing decisions I've seen all season, and that's saying a lot. How often do we say that? But it was horrendous.
Every week, eight times a show. it took a while for us to get going, but once that goal came, it kind of changed the entire nature of the game, didn't it? I expected a bit of caution on our side because of the injuries and all that, but it wasn't like that at all. It was hammer and tongs. But it was all about us for, I think, roughly about 18 minutes. Arsenal looked the better side, putting Wolfsburg on the back foot and looking dangerous every time they went forward. Another injury. Another one? Take us through that, Lauren. I didn't see the injury. I was just turning around to get a cup of tea, and then I just saw the carnage afterwards.
It was Wienreuter, was it?
Yeah.
That was actually in extra time, or it was in the second half anyway. She came on for Maritz, but...
Dave, what's going on here? You put it here after 14 minutes, and I thought it wasn't, and we argued about it.
Yeah.
And you've put it down. I'm going to blame you. Anyway, 42 minutes, Podders, pay attention. Mm-hmm. I know you will. We're all square. Alex Pop, as we said, knocked the free kick down following a foul near the halfway. Jill Roard was lurking on the edge of the penalty area, curling low drive shot past Zinsberger. Could have got down a little bit quicker, do you think?
She could have got down quicker for sure, but I don't think that takes away from the finish. It was a stunning strike.
It's no good trying to get over it now. You've typed it and I've just read it. I didn't check this before we came on, but never mind.
In fairness, neither did I. So, the goal itself was good. Unfortunately, I think Zinsberger probably could have done more. She could have got down. There was a lot of bodies in the way, so you can almost forgive her for that. But, it was a tough one to take as well. But it didn't look like they were, it didn't look like they were going to dominate from that point on. So it was still all to play for.
1-1 and 3-3 on aggregate. They had a chance to get in front 45+4. Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll have a cup of tea after that mistake. Get busy. 47 minutes, Blackstinius scores, but this one's ruled out as offside. It was a great move down the right, but I agreed with the decision. Really slick passing, brilliant football, which you'd expect from a very healthy and full Arsenal team. Around 57 minutes, Wolfsburg claimed the lead through Pop. This was a real classic moment of poor defending, no one picking up, all sort of idling in the box, because there she was on the edge of the area and the ball came over and she was totally unchallenged, wasn't she? Yeah. Someone should have done something, closed down the space, because she got it through a very narrow corridor into the net.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I mean, look, this is the quality player that we're talking about. This is what we mean when we say you see Alex Pop on the on the sheet and you worry.
Very apologetic because... over there. It's too late. You've done it. Yeah. Anyway, Lauren, sorry.
No worries. You see her on the sheet, on the score, on the team sheet, and you just worry because you know. I think she scored 12 goals in the Bundesliga this season. They've all been headers. So this is her bread and butter. This is, you know, the fact that no one was picking her up. Does show perhaps a bit of an experience, a bit of unorganization, but players like that, they don't need much space. They can just convert these balls and they come in, and that's exactly what she did. She showed her quality there, and yeah, we probably could have done more, but again, it's such an inexperienced back line that you can't be too harsh on them when they come up against players like this, I don't think.
I just had to watch it again because I even watched it again today because it looked like it kind of came over and went off the back, but it wasn't. It was a proper stonking head, full head on it, knew exactly. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best headers in the business, or headers in the business. Lots of R's on there. 74th minute, we get back into it. Free kick goes wayward to the right side. Ruben Moy keeps it in, puts in a testing cross, and Beattie, another good header, steers it in. Tell us a bit more about Beattie. I don't really know that much about her, and let the podcast family know what you know.
Yeah, so I mean, she's probably one of our more experienced players. She's been with the club for a very long time. There was a season that she was out. She was battling cancer. She's some woman. She's so, so incredible. And you could see the minute, I believe it was the game when Leah Williamson came off, she came on at halftime. And as soon as she was on the pitch, you could just see the calm and the experience that she brought. And there was a level of calmness in the back line that, you know, isn't there when she's not playing. But for a period of this game, she was playing up front as a striker. You know, she was our big player up front, and she just looked dangerous up there. And as soon as she scored the goal, she dropped back into the back three. And it was, I mean, the reaction on Twitter was crazy. It was like, what is going on here? Who sent Jen Beattie up top? Keep her up there, you know, she's doing what we need her to do. She's converting these balls in. Also Ruben Moy, you know, that center back pairing, they've been playing so, so well together. They both have fantastic games. It was great to see her get the assist on her weaker foot as well, but it was some header. And you know, I think the highlight of that goal for me was when she absolutely bulldozed Pop down. You know, it looked like she was trying to body her on the edge of the box as Beattie went to celebrate, and Beattie was having none of it. She brought her straight to the ground. It was a great moment, and it just brought so much life back into the crowd, because it just felt like this game wasn't over, you know. And yeah, an incredible player, and no one more fitting to score the equalizer in such an important game than her.
Well, that as I say, you said the atmosphere was electric, and you just couldn't take your eyes off it. It was 2-2, 4-4 on aggregate, and there was a series of chances, wasn't there, for both sides? But our luck ran out after a dreadful mistake by Ruben Moy. What happened there? It kind of reminded me of the men's team, kind of doddling about at the back, poodling around.
Yeah. Yeah, she got the ball, and you know, you can say tired legs at this stage. She had an exceptional game. I really want to reiterate that she had an absolutely exceptional game. We're talking, you know, second choice centre back coming in through string of injuries. She had a phenomenal game, and it's so unfortunate that, you know, that one mistake cost us that place in the final. But I just want to say that again, because I don't think she deserves any discredit for the performance that she put in. Yeah, she got the ball. I think it was from a goal kick out, and she kind of hesitated a bit too long, and the Wolfsburg player was able to take it out from under her feet. And you know, it didn't take much, because the defenders were so tired that the ball went in, and I actually don't know who scored for Wolfsburg, but basically it was a classic cross in, and she was there. All she had to do was tap it home. And, you know, in the 118th minute, it was tough. It was a tough one to take, just after Katie McCabe had hit the bar the other end from a cross. It was,
yeah, that was a nice old bar rattler. I do like the bar rattler.
Yeah, I would prefer if it went in, but, you know.
Well, yeah. We've got one of those coming up. So, yeah, mm-hmm. It was Jewel Brand picked it off a toe. And leaving Bremer to get it on that end of that low cross. Mixed feelings about it, as you said, because so proud. It was such a great game to watch. And even if you didn't support either side, you would have got something out of this game. But, tired legs. That kind of wraps it up. But did we really think that we could go into Barcelona next with a depleted side? Probably not. And penalties or that last minute, last gasp goal, what's worse? I don't really know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I also went to see the Barcelona-Chelsea, the other semi-final last week. And I mean, that Barcelona team.
Nice for you, isn't it? Barcelona.
It's not too bad. But no, I mean, I've seen so much of that team this season, and I really do think they're unstoppable. Wolfsburg is kind of their bogey team as well. I think they lost to them in the semi-final last year. So look, it's going to be a great final. Two fit and able teams who can field 11 players, you know, and Alexia Putellas is back for Barcelona as well after her ACL injury, which is really, really great to see. So look, that final's on the 3rd of June, I believe. So it's going to be a great game, even if you're not a fan of either teams. It would have been great for Arsenal to get there, but I think the way that they went out also, you know, we picked up another injury, as we mentioned previously, in Wien Reuter, and that looked like another nasty ACL injury.
Yeah, Dave, in the second half, extra time, yeah, I'll just rub it in a bit. Anyway, score is still 1-0, Lauren.
It looks like it. I think so. I can't hear anything from the TV. And yeah, it's from what I can see, it's still 1-1.
Max got one eye on it as well.
As well, yeah.
Right, let's do the stats for that game. As we said, miserable ending. And we would have they deserved to get to a final after all the ups, the downs, the trials, the tribulations, and those injuries. They deserve something, but that's football. So let's go. We'll go Arsenal first, Wolfsburg second, 10 shots to 17, 5 shots on target for us, 9 for them, 47% possession for us, 53% for them, 4-3-4 passes for us, 4-9-4 for them, 76% pass accuracy for us and 75% for them. So there's virtually nothing in that. So we've got to pick ourselves up now with whatever's left and take on Leicester on Friday. Tea woman, get some socks and some boots on.
It's getting a bit drastic now. Like I said, obviously the Wienroeder injury looked very, very serious. You could tell by the players, they've seen ACL injuries this season before. You know the reaction as soon as a player goes down clutching their knee. That's number 4 of the season if it's confirmed. Nothing's been said yet, so maybe it won't be that bad, but it's definitely a season ending knee injury. We've had enough of them already. We only have 11 fit players at this stage. It's getting tight, and look, it's tough. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. The most important thing is getting back into the Champions League spot for next season. So at the moment we're 4th. We have 2 games in hand on City and United, who are second and first and second respectively. And look, it's all to play for. I know Chelsea are playing right now. They're playing Liverpool in the WSL, and they were 1-0 down the last I saw, but they end up winning 2-1. So look, it's all...
That's it. Build me up.
I know. That's what it's like being an Arsenal fan. But no, there's still a few more games to go in the WSL. And, you know, maybe it's a blessing in disguise that we can focus on that now, keep as many players fit as we can, and just keep pushing for those spots to retain the quality of players we have, because there's so many players coming back next season. Mead, Miedema, obviously Williamson as well.
Like a new team, isn't it?
Exactly, like a new team, and a lot of players who deserve to be playing in Champions League football. So fingers crossed that we're able to achieve that, because I don't think we deserve any less.
Paul, you're making some very strange noises. Did you, was it? I don't know. Probably it was about the football, but I'm not sure.
I've got my other few games this evening, Tom. I'm on the National League eliminator between Woking and Bromley, and Bromley just gone 2-1 up.
Oh, right. Okay. It's like being on the Saturday sports thing, isn't it? With Jeff Stelling. Right then, Paul, here's one for you. Big Sam. He's back. Yes. Captain Bung's back. He's been installed as the Leeds manager on £500,000 for 4 matches and a £1 million bonus payment. I mean, it's Kate. I don't really understand this because 10 games to go, you bring him in and maybe that sounds like good value. But 4 games, obviously there's some training sessions he has to take as well, but let's not cut him short. But this is ridiculous. This goes to show how much the Premier League is worth staying in.
Well, also goes to show how good the negotiator Sam Allardyce is when these kind of jobs come calling his way. Because I remember when Everton approached him and he kind of suspected that he wouldn't be there beyond the summer, but he insisted on an 18-month contract before he got the job. And as it happened, he was only in the job on 7 months anyway because the fans wanted him out in the summer. So he's a very good negotiator. We know from past experience, whenever he's got a chance of making money legally or illegally, he will
gladly... Was it in a plastic bag? Was it in a Tesco's bag wrapped in newspaper?
I wouldn't surprise me if he was stuck behind the bin or something like that, you know, but great decision. I mean, you know, yeah, you have utmost sympathy for Leeds fans. You go from watching the thrilling football under Bielsa, because Leeds were just fabulous to watch, whether you like them as a team or not. Bielsa brought the style of football to that club that invigorated the whole city. And then you go from that to going back to Big Sam, who, you know, I don't want to discredit the guy, but I just think his time has gone. He fell to keep West Brom up 2 years ago.
And just think
his best days are behind it. And it just kind of strikes the short-termism of the way football directors think about their Premier League status. Because I think you've seen Arsenal this season sticking by the manager. And this time last year, the people on this pod was not Arteta out. So there is a real short-termism about fans' perspective and about the
you must be talking about Richard. Richard, hiya.
I'm not naming any names.
Yeah, we're still having banter about certain things on the... And I go on a show every now and again. So, you're right. I mean, this is crazy, isn't it? Trying to... claw back your status, Premier League status, doing absolutely anything.
It's madness, son. I mean, Graffy actually got he won 3 out of his 6, he won 3 out of his first 6 games. So he made a half decent start. And if you're a Leeds United player, I mean, what must you go through when you turn up for a training session? You've gone from Bielsa ball, where you come throwing up because you've been working so hard. Then he goes to Jesse Marsh ball, which like lobbed the ball forward and go chasing after it. Now you're going to Big Sam ball, which like kicked the ball 90 as high in the sky as you can hope the big fella gets on the end of it. You win the second ball. So you know, for them, it must be a real mental adjustment into what the hell are we supposed to be doing here. So, but from an Everton perspective, you just have this horrible feeling that you know. Allardyce was such a reviled manager at Goodison Park. Wouldn't it just be ultimate irony if he kept Leeds up and we went down? I really don't think I could survive that.
Well, you'll have to, won't you? It's a crazy old setup, as I say. But the interesting one is, obviously, he's going to be taking on Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. And if he can get the ball rolling with that one, then they're in with a good chance because the momentum will be with them and they'll probably stay up. Right, let's cover. I know we don't want to, Thomas, but we've got to do it. It's part of the job. We're going to cover the City game. I'll ask the Pocketeers for their thoughts. But I just want to say it wasn't so much the loss. I can take a loss, but the performance, the loss without a performance, I didn't see anything. They didn't bring any. There was no player that actually stood out and you thought, oh, he had a good game. It was a lot of negative stuff, unfortunately. They didn't even get out of the traps. And they made City look really good. And I'm quite sick of hearing about how good Manchester City are.
They Do you want to hear something soft. Else? They've just gone 2-0 up.
Is it the robot?
It is. Of course, of course. Who else? God.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, the fans and the team, you know, there's some sparkling football from Manchester City, but we made them look ever so good. we've been the better side in recent contests. That's what annoys me. And even Pep gave us it. I think when Gabriel got sent off, we were all over him like a cheap suit or a rash. You choose. But it was a mismatch. It was a capitulation. It was horrible, awful to watch. And when you think that the games leading up to this, we weren't firing either. I mean, I just don't know what the problem was. First off, credit to the away fans who never stopped trying to lift the players. They've been absolutely sensational. Lauren, your thoughts on this game? Unfortunately, as I said, we've got to cover it. We'll try and skim over it, Podders, but we can't.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. To be honest, I haven't watched any highlights back. I haven't thought about it since it happened. I've really
watching it once was
on.
A struggle.
Yeah. No, look, it was from a performance perspective, it was not good. It was one of the worst performances we've had in the Premier League this season. We looked as if we were defeated before a ball was kicked. No one looked like they wanted to fight. They looked intimidated. They looked tired as well. Maybe it was a lack of rotation in the starting 11. Same team has been playing over and over again, despite dropping points, which is something that we're probably going to talk about as well when we come to the Chelsea game. But it was an embarrassing performance. But at the end of the day, look, it's City.
Would you say that's the worst one this season, Lauren?
It's the one that's hurt the most, but that was pretty far up there. It's the one that's hurt the most. I mean, there's some, yeah, it probably was the worst, to be honest. I don't remember any of the draws against, you know, Southampton ever feeling that bad, or even West Ham, or even when we were defeated 1-0 at home by Everton. It wasn't as bad as that because there was a bit more fight in the game, but this one we just looked like we lay down and let them walk all over us. You know, there was no fight, there was no grit, there was no determination. I think, you know, even 4-1, it sounds bad, and it was. It probably was the result that we deserved, you know. I hate to say it, but it was a tough watch. They outplayed us. But look, it's a lesson, and how many times have we taken lessons and grown from them? So look, it's something to work on for next season, and you know, that will be the season that we can go to the Etihad and hopefully take 3 points and win.
Paul, what did you make of it? I mean, it was like sticking pins in your eyes for an Arsenal supporter. Washing it down with battery acid. It was one of those nights. What did you make?
Yeah, I'd agree with what Lauren said there. I think Arsenal just, for whatever reason, from the first minute, didn't quite look at the pace of the game. There was a nervy sort of interesting pass in Ramsdale in the first 5 minutes, but they almost fumbled the ball and gave that away to City. And I just felt then they weren't quite up to the speed that they needed to be at to prevent City from dominating the game. And I just felt what would have frustrated me most from an Arsenal point of view was, in particular, letting City players walk around you. The first goal as well, letting a long ball from Edison be headed on by Haaland, and then Kevin De Bruyne picks it up and scores. It's a Route 1 goal, you know. It's a Sam Allardyce masterclass, but because of Pep Guardiola, it's brilliant football. Yeah, it's just so...
Poor old Sam is going to cop it tonight. Plastic bags full of money. Putting the ball up with the seagulls.
But to me, the key moments of the game, I was saying this to some before the game started, that City have got a habit this season of scoring just before half-time. They've made a real... They do this about every two or three games. I was looking at the watch, it's 44 minutes here. Arsenal have been awful, but they're only 1-0 down. Get to half-time at 1-0 down. And every possibility is still on. But when Partey gave away that stupid free kick, and they go, why have you done that? You're almost at half time, mate. You just get to half time, you know, regroup, regather, come off the second half. Really dubious VAR decision, but you know, that's the way VAR works these days, unfortunately. And you just knew that at 2-0, it really was going to be an uphill struggle for Arsenal.
Yeah.
Big players didn't perform. I think there's no question about for Partey. I had a particularly underwhelming game. Rob Holding as Haaland, so it was just a mismatch. It really was. I think on the pod, it had been talked about before how to deal with Haaland. And one thing you don't do is get that close to him and let him turn you. And unfortunately, he was better than the Holding on the day. I think in the show last week, there was some talk about whether Ben White might have been worth risking a centre-back and going for a younger player, a right-back. Looking back, that could have been the best option. I don't know. But yeah, it was just... and then you think about, you're two down, Don't get humiliated. Keep it at 2-0. Try and pull one back. Try and stay in the contest. When Holding got that goal back, I thought, okay, 3-1. You know, get a second one, it doesn't look too bad. I was thinking back to when City beat Man United at the start of the season. At one stage, it was 6-1. And you thought, this is humiliation. But United got back to 6-3. So the result didn't look as bad as what it should have done. Mm-hmm. And when Arsenal got back to 3-1, I think, yeah, great, go on, put the pressure on. And I was delighted that you know, but the robots hadn't scored. I thought, this is great. And then, of course, you know, he goes against the fourth goal, and it just puts a completely different spin on the game. But you know, if you're being dispassionate about the whole thing, okay, it's 3 points lost, but you've got the chance to get those 3 points back again. I still think City are going to stumble somewhere along the way. I look at their fixtures when you throw in the FA Cup final as well against Manchester United. They've got two Champions League semi-finals. You have Real Madrid coming up. And I watched a bit of their game against Fulham at the weekend, and I wasn't mega impressed.
Yeah.
I thought Fulham gave them a really hard time. And I just think...
Fulham had Mitrovic out and Williams as well.
Exactly. But what
it might have stunk the Emirates out, but down there at the cottage, he loves it.
That's true, but I just thought the Fulham words didn't look as intimidating as what Arsenal did at City. They almost kind of went out with the idea, we've got nothing to lose here. No one thinks we're going to get anything from this game. And they had a go at them, they rattled them, they created opportunities. And on another day, they might have sneak a point from the game. But from an Arsenal perspective, yeah, it was a very depressing experience. And but I think as well, the timing of the game was quite...
Well, Paul, he doesn't get any rest, does he? He has to watch Everton and their crap, and he has to watch Arsenal play crap as well.
Well, there's light years of difference between those two statements, Tom, let me assure you. But I think as well, the timing of the game really worked against Arsenal because you were on a poor run of form going into that game. You know, in this kind of different world, you know, if you hang on to win at Liverpool, if Saka scores a penalty against West Ham, if you don't start so badly against Southampton, and you go into that game with three wins under your belt rather than having drop points, then you can go there and hang on for the draw. You don't need to win. But because all the impetus was on Arsenal to try and get a win there, I just kind of felt that worked against them.
Yeah,
I think it was the experience as well. They're lacking experience on those occasions. People will say, don't shoot me, but I'm just going to sound this out, is that basically they when these positions come up, you've got to have the experience to get through them and grind out a draw. Sometimes as well, I think we needed a draw against Spurs and we just fell apart. It was that intense pressure. And you've got to be able to deal with that, obviously. But in two seasons' time, with the additions to the squad, so you've got to go easy, Podders. We're at a stage where we never thought we'd be. We thought it would take probably another two or three seasons to be where we are. And yes, we're in this position now, and we should be trying to exploit it and go for it. And that's what we're doing. You can't dictate when teams win and lose. It's just a tough gig to watch. But let's try and op off of this before we all depress ourselves. January 2015 was the last time Arsenal beat Manchester City in the Premier League at the Etihad. That sucks. Since 2010, Arsenal have only won two games away to City in the Premier League. Mikel Arteta was brutally honest in his assessment. We were beaten by the better team. They were exceptional today. It is extremely hard to reach those levels and we were nowhere near. You have to start competing, winning your duels. They were on top of us. We couldn't handle the situation. We knew that they had a capacity to go direct. Yeah, as you say, that first goal was a... hello, there's a little noise. What was that? Was that a noise of pleasure or pain? What was it, Paul?
He won't be interested.
He stubbed his toe. That's what it was.
my brother works in Cambridge, so I always keep an eye on Cambridge United scores, but they got beat 1-0 tonight.
Oh, right. continuing, we knew they had the capacity to go direct, but we were not in the right positions to deal with it. As you said, that De Bruyne goal was outstanding. It was route one, but you still got to take that, and he struck it ever so well. Ramsdale had been panned last time out, but to be fair, Podders, if it hadn't been for Ramsdale in this game, I reckon it would have been 5-0 at half-time and probably 7 or 8 overall. So, Haaland was everywhere as well, which annoyed me. You knew he was eventually going to appear. Sorry, itchy nose. Sorry, Potters. You knew he was going to appear on the team sheet. And obviously, we would have fared better had we had Saliba. City looked open for about 5 minutes, didn't they? But then they applied the press to devastating effect. They narrowed the pitch, cut out the space, went forward in numbers, and virtually they were like a fire blanket. They just cut us out and run us ragged. They were triangulating as well. I don't know if I did, me and Dave, yes, we've got over that now. We were doing this analysis and you could see these triangles, these moving, fluent triangles as they were applying the press. It's quite fascinating, actually, and boring at the same time. So the talking points. John Stones, Lauren, was he offside? In my opinion, yes, he was. You can look at the angles. The thing with this offside thing and the lines and all that, depending on the angle that you look at it, you can apply those lines and make yourself correct. But there was one that was flush on from the side, not tilted at the angle, and that red line put him offside. What did you think?
Yeah, when I was watching it, I thought, yeah, safe offside. And then I saw the replays being shown. You know, there wasn't that much. They didn't look surprised and they called it offside. So from that perspective, I thought, yeah, OK, it's definitely going to be offside. But then once the replays were shown and the lines were drawn, I have to say, I do think it was offside. I
think there's two blokes in that half.
Yeah.
Where is it? Some park or another. Benchley Park or whatever. What's it called, Paul?
Stop me, Park.
Where'd I get Benchley from? I don't care. They're eating hot dogs, leaning over this tiny little screen going, I'd tip it the other way. Get that red string out. And that's what they do. Shocking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought it was offside all day long. That's another one of those. It's another VAR job that went tits. Paul, should Dias have got a red card? Dias. Let's give him his proper pronunciation. Dias. Did you see it? Where he kind of flicked back.
No, I did watch the game and just trying to recall the incident. It's one of those.
It was on Ben White as Ben White was coming back in to play. Yeah. He rose his leg up, but we'll have plenty to say about that. Paul. Don't you worry.
Well, it's one of those things, isn't it? You know, I just think sometimes certain players, because they have a reputation of being ball-playing maestros, are allowed to put in tackles that other less skillful players will automatically get penalised for. So, that kind of decision doesn't surprise me.
Mark Clattenburg said, I think what they did was, listen to this explanation, it's brilliant. I think what they did is look for a potential red card. Did Ruben Dias use any force in a challenge with the kick out to Ben White? He didn't. It was more of a petulant kick, and therefore VAR was correct in identifying that it was a yellow card offence, he told BT Sport. Now, Podders, strap in. We're going to pick this apart, this interesting argument. Michael Bradley on Facebook pointed out that the decisions from refereeing and VAR are going to cost us the title. He has a point. I said that no favours. What's happening? Is someone scored?
No.
Robot again?
No, it's not the poor man's Dixie Dean. No,
yeah, it's due for an oil change.
it's Phil Foden.
Anyway, as I said to Michael on Facebook, we don't generally get the rub of the green with these decisions. And Tom Jones once said, it's not unusual to get this one. Michael replied that basically, to be fair, that the officiating is now so poor that it tends to favour the Manchester clubs. But I want to pull this up for you, Paul. Beckham, World Cup 98 against Argentina. It was that leg raised up into the back. And he got sent off for that in 98. This was absolutely similar. So, where have we progressed or gone wrong?
Well, I mean, I know you don't like me to talk about Tottenham on this show, but watching the game on Sunday when Diogo Jota, you know, kicks a skip right in the head, splits his forehead open, yet the referee thinks that, you know, that was a genuine challenge for the ball and only gives a yellow card. So, I mean, some of the decisions, when you get to these areas, the more classic statement you've referenced there, Tom, about kind of it, the intention of the person trying to win the ball rather than the action of the person trying to win the ball. You'd be employing like a VAR psychologist next to tell like, oh, what the person's motives were. So
did he mean it or didn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think you have to judge the action on the action itself rather than what was going through the player's mind when he carried out that particular movement. So I think we all thought after the World Cup in 2018, when VAR seemed to work quite successfully, I thought at the time, that it was going to have a positive impact here. But it's actually created a lot more difficulties and unanticipated problems. And it's left matters more open to individual interpretation, which what we thought VAR was supposed to get rid of as well. So I'm still a bit bemused by some of the outcomes that are made by the people officiating at football games.
Well, you pulled up that example there of kicking someone in the head. Granit Xhaka kicked Jota in the stomach, and he got sent off for that. And he couldn't even see him as the ball was coming over.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Couldn't see him at all. So, podcast family, what are we going to do with these refs? Tie them up and send them to Peru or something. Right then, Lauren, Haaland handball at 3-0. Yes or no?
Yeah, oh, that was.
Mean it. He didn't mean it. It wasn't in an unnatural position.
I think that was from a free kicker, a corner. Yeah. That was from what I can remember, it was a clear and obvious penalty. But again, maybe I'm being biased. To refresh myself. Hold on, I have it here in front of me. That was from.
Oh, she's got all the technology. I've got bits of paper. Yeah. Look at me.
When was that?
I screw it up when I'm on the iPad.
No, I don't have it here. I can't find it. But from what I can remember, it was a clear and obvious. His hand moved out from his body. So, yeah, it should have been a penalty. But look, this is one of those other things that I'm never going to understand. I think there was issues in the Chelsea game as well.
We're splitting hairs because we're bad losers. That's what it is. And the final one, Paul, a penalty for the challenge by the goalkeeper on Nketiah. I thought, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there was a fair case for giving that, but whether it would have made any difference.
But did he mean it?
what was his intention? I mean, was he acting in a kind, non-aggressive way with that particular move? I don't know. I just give up trying to interpret decisions these days. And Lauren, going back to the Haaland's the potential handball, when one of the head honchos of FIFA comes out and says nobody understands the handball rule these days, I think actually nailed that right on the head. So there has to be some clarification. I mean, the T-shirt line, the natural stance of the arm, and these are all quite difficult concepts to try and make a judgment on in an instant moment from the referee's perspective. So yeah, there definitely needs to be more guidance and a clear this isn't scenario. Or
for sure.
And the other possibility is, does that type of thing maybe merit an indirect free kick rather than penalty in the penalty box? Because I just think there's way too many penalties being awarded at the moment, and they have so much influence in the outcomes of the games.
Mm-hmm. I've got to be honest, if this carries on with VAR and the referees need to sort themselves out. But if we have another season like this, I think VAR is going to be kicked out the door, because I don't think the clubs are the ones who've got the power to change things. And they're going to apply the pressure surely, because the decisions are absolutely horrendous. The lack of clarity and common sense, it just goes out the window. Anyway, let's get off of that, because we'll do a whole podcast on that, for God's sake. There was footage at the end of a little bit of a to-do with Foden and White. I don't know what was going on there, a bit of handbags. It's no good showing that sort of fight, is my note here, when you don't show any fight on the pitch. When the whistle's gone, it's no good getting an arsey with someone, because you've lost. Do it in your shirt, let it be done on the pitch. Mm-hmm. And let's put a shiny bit on it. Did you see, I put it on my Twitter account and Facebook as well, Haaland in his pants, pictured with Noel Gallagher.
That
cheered me up, to be honest, because I thought, oh, I'm not so badly off myself. It was absolutely shocking. Why he thought that was a good idea is beyond me. Someone should have said, hey, do you know you got your pants on? Oh, yeah. and you're not looking happy. That's what they should have said. Anyway, on to the Chelsea game. Frank's been so consistent, hasn't he? Firstly, let's deal with this update on this moron who shone a green light, like a little laser pen, into Mudrick's face. I kind of think that that's the sort of behaviour of Yobbos and Chelsea fans, but apparently it was one of our own, because you can't see a Chelsea fan doing that to one of his own players. It's not out of the question, because they're a bit dense and to be pitied, but it was an Arsenal fan. Now, apparently there's a prosecution coming, and I hope they ban him from every sporting event going, so he can't even go in and watch a game of snooker. That's what I just wanted to say. So, 12 London derbies, no losses, 10 wins, 2 draws, 2 draws against Brentford and West Ham, 29 goals scored, 8 goals conceded in the 150th Premier League derby win, which pleased me up after all the stuff we've suffered. Lauren, how did you feel going into this game? Was it one of consolidation? Did you feel like, you know, it's all slipping away, but we'll have the silver medal?
Look, if we couldn't do it against Chelsea, there was no real hope for us.
Frank was doing his bit, wasn't he?
Yeah. No, going into the game, obviously a bit nervous. We've slipped up against teams there recently, West Ham, not to discredit them in any way, but teams that we should be winning if we want to really push for the title and challenge City right to the end. And obviously that hadn't been the case for a while. It was a bit nervy, but you know, so one thing that I was really, really happy to see was the shake-up in the starting 11. And I kind of briefly mentioned it there against City, because I think it probably should have happened sooner. And I wonder, was Arteta waiting for a loss before he did shake up, you know, the starting 11? Because obviously we've dropped points, but we haven't lost a game since the City game. And I wonder, was he just holding out to see if he does seem to favour consistency within the team and rarely rotates unless needed. And I think he was just waiting to see if he could get away with hopefully playing the same players he's been playing throughout the season, obviously injury permitting, and hopefully they would get their act together. But they showed against City that wasn't the case. So I think we had, it was Holding, who else had been dropped? Holding, Partey, thank you. And Martinelli, which I thought was a bit harsh, but I think we did need to see Trossard back in the starting 11 because he's shown so much. And who with the front three are you going to rotate? So, yeah, I was really delighted to see the fresh legs as well getting a start. Kiroor as well, I think, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. It was really exciting to see him get his first Premier League start. And, you know, overall, I was feeling pretty positive about the game because, as I said, it's Chelsea and, you know...
It's, you know. Oh, if you know someone who's a Chelsea fan, just show them this, because we're going to kick the arse out of this in a bit more, cut you and put some lemon in there. For me, it was obvious changes because Holding looked a bit out of his depth. He's got his limitations. He knows that. We know that. And it was just the best of the options, to be kind. And Kiwior coming in place of him was a very good move. Now, I'm all for loyalty. I'm all for that. But there comes a time where you just have to shift it round. And I think Arteta kind of smelt the coffee, as it were. So let's take you through that Arsenal team. 4-3-3, Aaron Ramsdale, Ben White, Kiwior, Jacob Kiwior. Hopefully I got that right. Gabriel, Zinchenko, Odegaard, God bless. Jorginho, which was nice to see him come in because Partey's had a couple of shockers, a couple of stinkers. Granit Xhaka, Bukayo Saka, Gabriel Jesus, and Mr. Trossard, we were glad to see you back. Arteta said on that it was necessary to reset, recharge the batteries and bring some clarity again and focus on the big game tonight. We conceded too many goals. We had to shake it up to give people opportunities that they deserve. So interesting stuff. Thankfully, normal service was resumed. Good old Frank. It was a good start, wasn't it, Paul? Chelsea just couldn't get out of their half. They were buried in there. It's such a mess down there. They've got real quality players who can't play together and they've got no idea of what to do with the ball, how to defend and how to attack or retain possession.
Yeah, sounds like a Frank Lampard team to me. just going back to the team section about Rob Holding, I don't know what you and Lauren think of this, but every time I see Rob Holding with the Alice band, I'm thinking, you ever imagine Tony Adams coming off to play for Arsenal with an Alice band, keeping his hair in place? You know, it's a different generation, isn't it? I think as long as it was a free hit, you know, at the moment, Chelsea are your ideal opponents to play against. And so I think Arteta had to make changes. I think I've said this point before. I really rate Trossard. I think he's an outstanding footballer. And what you get from week in, week out is a consistent level of performance. He's never 100% brilliant, but he never dipped to about 80, 90%. He passes the ball well. He involves other players in the build-up. And he's good at keeping possession. And he creates opportunities and he unsettles defenders. So I thought that the changes worked really well. And yeah, it was really good watching Saka because when he's given time and space, he's a top level player. And I know, not everyone might agree with that statement, but his creativity, the pass for Odegaard's first goal, the way he delivers it, it was just set up for him to smash it home. So, yeah, Arsenal's not hugely impressive. And I know we're going to talk about the game in more detail, but yeah, I'm sure you two, when Arsenal went 2-0 for us, hang on, 2-0 then.
I was cacking my pants when we were one up because I put on Facebook, we need at least another two goals to see this out of the way. Because at least if you got three, that takes a hell of a performance to concede three.
But at least by getting through a half time, I think you could rest easy thinking, but Chelsea are going to come back for this, and they didn't. But yeah, it was a very strong request performance. And it was back to the Arsenal at the start of the season when Joe was on the pub and Lon and yourself. When we referenced the fact that Arsenal were grabbing games by the scruff of the neck in the first 5-10 minutes, putting the opposition under pressure, getting 1-2 goals ahead. And it was good to see them getting back to that level of performance again.
Mm-hmm. Well, 18 minutes in, Xhaka out on the left, fires a low cross infield to Odegaard, who opens up his body to steer in a stellar shot. I've looked at it from all the angles. I've watched it again today. He's one hell of a player, isn't he? They say he doesn't turn up on the big occasions and only against the smaller teams. Obviously, Chelsea are in crisis. But they are. I'm loving it. If only they could get relegated. Frank, come back next year. But he's a hell of a player, isn't he, Lauren?
He is. I think, let's be honest, he didn't have his best game against City. I think in terms of the midfield, it wasn't just him. It didn't see him at all. And I think he was at fault for the third goal, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, it was a loose ball. Yeah. So look, what a response for him to come back. He's, 24, wearing the captain's band. He is a natural born leader. You see it every time he's on the pitch. He can lead by example. And that's exactly what we saw yesterday evening against Chelsea. That goal, the finish was exceptional. What's he on now? 14 goals in the Premier League this season. Crazy, crazy statistic from our, central.
As soon as he left his foot, it had gone.
He knew it was going in. Yeah.
You saw him breeze in, pick that up, and you just thought, yes, I was out of the seat before it hit the neck.
Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. It was almost a classic Odegaard goal where you're thinking that's cheeky, to take a shot from there, but you just know it's going to go in as it seems, at least as foot as you said. But it's the perfect response that we needed from no one else than our captain. It was a great way to kind of reestablish the pace and reestablish who we are and the identity that Arsenal, as Paul was saying, had at the beginning of the season. They're a team who are here to win. They're a young team. They have full of drive and they want to, they want to get goals as soon as possible in games.
Right. Well, Podders, we're going to make the most of this because we've been upset by the first two. So we're going to milk the teats of this. Paul, Chelsea just lacked any ambition, any ideas, couldn't get their game going. Desperate need of a direction and identity. Is Pochettino the man to do this? Because he's going to have to clear out in the summer. Apparently 17 players. What's he going to be left with apart from 8.5-year deals?
Well, I think the bigger question is whether Pochettino would actually want that job at the moment. Yeah. Because straight away, if you consider yourself to be a big name manager, then you're going to think twice about taking on a club that's not got European football next season at any level. So I'm sure that that'll be a factor in his consideration. Secondly, if you're a Chelsea fan, do you really want the next Tottenham manager taking over your club? I just think that kind of has implications as well in terms of how you view that in terms of the DNA and culture of the club. And you said it to Toddy Longpockets a few times on this pod, Tom. And I think, yeah, it's another classic case of an owner who thinks that if you throw money at a problem, you solve the problem. But actually, mm-hmm. you don't. You sometimes make it worse. I know this from Everton's experience. And you kind of compare and contrast with Brighton and Brentford, and to some extent with Arsenal this season as well, and even with Newcastle. You know, recruitment is key. You can't just go out and spend mega bucks and give 10-year contracts to every player who Facebook likes. You've got to have a bit more research behind. You've got to have a bit more depth to your recruitment. So it's an awful job to take at the moment. And you spend all that money, but you don't bring in a striker, so you rely on the failed goods of Aubameyang to try and get the goals for you. It's an awful situation to be. I know you two must be looking at Mudge thinking, thank God we got Trossard instead of him. Thank God for that.
Well, this is very reminiscent of where Arsenal were a few years ago when we had Raul in charge and Sven was and they were battling to pick people. So Sven just didn't kind of understand what Unai Emery wanted. So he just went out and bought players that he thought were good. So there was no idea about fitting them in the team, no balance, no direction, no sort of blueprint really to take it forward. And this is where Chelsea are at. They're in a right old mess. I'm enjoying every moment of it. But the clubs, as you say, can't go spending money when you don't know what you're doing. You've got to have some idea at least of where you're going. Let's get back to the game. We started to find our passing game. Chelsea stood off and allowed us too much room, too much flow. 31 minutes was a photocopy of the first goal. Almost. Xhaka out on the left again, whips in a low cross. Odegaard met the ball. And it's crazy, isn't it? Every time I saw him interviewed and he said every time that Granit Xhaka goes up in that position, he knows if he's in or around that area, he's going to get that pass, Lauren.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you could see, and it was slightly different as well. I thought there was a bit more, I think it was Jesus did very well. He kind of dragged the players, created a bit more space for Odegaard as well, but it was phenomenal finish again. Xhaka had, what a game he had. As I said, you know, we wanted that response from our captain. We got that from, I mean, Jack is as much as a leader as Odegaard is really, you know, and he has that grit and almost, you know, dirty will to fight that I think Odegaard lacks sometimes, and they complement each other really, really, really well. And that's what we saw yesterday. It was a great performance from the
sort
two players that need to
good
be.
Good cop, bad cop.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, we couldn't have asked for a better response to the City game, really, from the two on, you know, the two leaders on the pitch. It was a great, great response. And yeah, funny that it was basically the exact same goal. You would have thought that Chelsea would have learned from
do you know what
their
I thought?
Mistakes,
I thought I'd
it doesn't
sat on
seem
the remote
way.
Control and wound it back, and I was watching it over again. I thought, what's going on? It's different, but it's the same, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Look, I'll take it. I don't care if it's the same type of goal every week. Goal to goal.
Six times a match. Yeah. 34 minutes, the game was effectively over. White cross deep from the right. A scramble develops the left-hand corner of the Chelsea six-yard box. Jesus cuts back for Xhaka. He can't bury it. So eventually Jesus slams in from a tight angle, a couple of yards out. Chelsea then lost shape, discipline, and offered little resistance in defence, and couldn't fashion anything of purpose. People were moaning after halftime because we went in at 3-0 and they were expecting a cricket score. I was to a degree. And then I wised up. I had a cup of tea. I thought, well, these games generally go that you get slaughtered in the first half and you're expecting more goals. And in the second half, Paul, you come out and you've got a different sort of setup. Yeah. There is that trench mentality, not wanting to get embarrassed. Even Vieira was kind of going on about he wanted more goals, but you can see how these games shape up because they often do, don't they?
Yeah, I think, you know, Chelsea time things a lot more in the second half. And I think if you're on the Chelsea dressing room at half time, you know, you can't play as badly in the second half as what you did in the first half. So they kind of made a few changes to the system they were using as well. And yeah, it's always hard when you've had a brilliant 45 minutes like that. It's really hard to come out and repeat it in the second 45 minutes as well. So I wasn't expecting Arsenal particularly to go on score another three in the second half. obviously, you know, it was a part of the plan to concede the goal, but in the at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The goal difference between City and Arsenal is so big at the moment that it's not going to be clawed back between now and the end of the season. The important thing was just to get the 3 points and get the momentum going and get the and you know, it gave Arteta a chance to show he wasn't afraid to make big calls in terms of the team selection. And from an Arsenal perspective, you got all the big decisions right. The first four times was a brilliant performance. Okay, it turned off in the second half, but you've got to be realistic. The team have had an incredible run of games in the last 4, 5, 6 weeks. You know, they haven't quite got the energy to keep going for 90 minutes, but it was a really good performance. And from an Arsenal point of view, it's unrealistic to expect another 45 minutes at that level they had in the first half.
I was just happy with the 3 points and the win, to be fair. I mean, you know, after what we've suffered recently, I don't know what other people were thinking, but...
You'd have taken a 1-0 last minute, wouldn't you? Because at this stage...
I like a grubby 1-0. Dirty 1-0. Yes, please.
I wouldn't have minded a clean sheet, though. I really think that's... We need to get that back on track. It's getting a bit embarrassing at this stage. Even Chelsea can score against us at home, you know? I don't know. That's my only complaint about the game.
Laura, let's get our dirty laundry out then. 65th minute, we conceded another annoying goal. It's almost like we can't help ourselves. There was no one mopping up, no one really sensing the danger. And this is repetitive. Ramsdale was furious. But what can you do with this? I mean, we're doing the same thing. Like we spoke about with Odegaard's sort of photocopy goal. This is virtually the same thing happening every game.
Essentially, yeah. You know, it just takes one of the back four to switch off. And in this case, it was Zinchenko. And to be honest, the Chelsea player who scored, what's his name? I've actually never seen this player before. I was watching the game with my boyfriend and we were like, who is this fellow? When did he come in? Maybe he's one of the new ones that came in over the summer.
Is it Maduaki?
Maduaki, yes, Maduaki.
Yeah.
Is he from the academy? I honestly have never heard the name before, but I think he's
an academy player.
I mean, fair play to him for getting into a very swollen squad from the academy, first of all. I thought he had a good game. I think, you know, being objective here, he was probably Chelsea's best player on the pitch. Still didn't deserve a goal, but he did look dangerous and he was one of the brighter talents that was, you know, in the Chelsea, wouldn't be hard at the moment, but one of the brighter talents in the Chelsea team. But again, it's just poor defending, poor decisions, lapse of concentration. It was good ball in, but, you know, Zinchenko should not be letting his player run off him like that, and he didn't even attempt to make up the space. Gabriel had to cut in across, and
he let him sneak in behind. That was the annoying thing. And unfortunately, I'm not having a go at him because he's a hell of a player, and lucky to have him. He offers so much when we go forward, and he's just not quite on the mark or on the money as Tierney is in defence.
Yeah.
But that was a shocking lapse. I mean, he should have been a bit
really
more
bad.
But never mind. Now, the one that I found a bit interesting, Paul, was Trossard substituted for Martinelli. Now, wherever you go with this first team, you know, you've got to drop someone, you've got to put someone else in. Trossard deserved his start. But he didn't put a foot wrong for me. And I thought, what are you taking him off for? Some of the substitutions that Mikel makes are a bit baffling at times.
Yeah, but you know, it's at a stage of the game when the game is done and dusted, really. So, you know, you're not going to lose the game. But, it's more the case that he doesn't make substitutions when they need to be made and make substitutions when you don't need to make them. Is that being kind of part of the pattern this season? I'm not sure. But I said about Trossard before. I mean, if you're looking at value for money signings this season, he's got to be up there in the top three or four because he's just a complete footballer. His positional awareness, his sense of what's going on in the game, his movements, his ability to find players with a pass to open defences, been an excellent signing.
Gabriel got injured picking up on where you left off there with the substitutions not being at the right times or being early or late, or normally late, aren't they? Gabriel was limping about. I think he had four periods where he kind of went down, was clutching this, that and the other. He should have come off earlier, shouldn't he, Lauren? I mean, now we'll get to it in a minute, but Newcastle are on the horizon.
Yeah.
And we're short of options. We're fairly light. We'll get to that in a minute, but he should have gone off earlier, shouldn't he?
He should have gone off earlier. And it does make me beg to question how little faith Mikel Arteta now has in Rob Holding, to be completely honest, because you can't have your, let's be honest, he's our most experienced player in that back four now. I wouldn't be surprised if we did see Ben White come in now to the centre back, but you know, even then we'd have two players who haven't really played centre back for Arsenal this season, and Kiaror and Ben White having to drop in against Newcastle. It's definitely not ideal. And I think against Chelsea, when we're 3-1 up, it's probably a bit harsh that Holding wasn't brought on. And you know, we've seen how much Saliba's injury has impacted us this season. I thought it was a bit of a crazy decision to keep Gabriel on, because it looks like he was kind of asking to be taken off. He went down four times, as you mentioned, in the space of about 10 minutes. That's not normal, and that's not something that should be allowed to happen. You know, I'm surprised that, you know, even from the referee's point of view, that they weren't saying, okay, look, you need to, not forcing the substitution, but kind of, you know, saying, look, if you go down again, something needs to be done here. Because it was, I don't remember a game where I've seen a player go down that injured, that many times injured in such a short period of time. It was bizarre. The only thing that I can think of is maybe it is a lack of trust that Arteta has in Holding now, and maybe it was, you know, not wanting to play too inexperienced or, you know, slightly off the mark centre backs. But for the sake of the game, the 9 minutes that were left, I think it probably would have been the better option to prevent any, you know, potential risks of missing Gabriel and Saliba for a pretty crucial match this weekend.
Well, Mikel said he was going to leave him for 10 or 15 minutes. I think it was more like 20. And I was like, get him off. If anyone had come past in a white coat and a van and see me in the front room going, get him off. What are you doing? Take him off. He's injured. I was just talking to the TV, really. Paul, on that conundrum that we're going to face for Newcastle, we'll get onto the stats in a minute. Here's our options, really. Partey at right back. He's done that before, with White to the middle. Kiwior with Holding, or Ruel Waters as a right back, who's the young lad that we've got. He's been on the bench now and again. And White and Kiwior in the centre-back role. It's not very attractive, however we put it, is it?
No, I, as you said as well, Newcastle, they played Everton last Thursday, and they were really, really good. Lots of strength in attack as well. So, yeah, that sense of defensive partnership is going to be quite crucial in terms of going to Newcastle and getting something. I mean, personally, I'd be inclined to have Ben Weiss back in the centre defence. I know not everyone on this pod likes Tierney, particularly in the left-back position, but I think he needs to be solid defensively at Newcastle. Yeah. They're very good on the flanks. I'd actually go for Tierney rather than Zinchenko at left-back. Because I think it's the type of game where you're going to have to grind out a result. You're not going to get a chance to play the fast, free-flowing football that mm-hmm. you'd like to see. And I think, you know, I think also I'm going to have to give the back four a lot more protection from the midfielders as well. So it might well be the case that the midfielder has to play a lot deeper compared to what has done in previous games, and maybe try and hit Newcastle on the break more rather than starting off there in the front foot as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no question. It's a tough fixture. And I think Eddie Howe has got Newcastle really well organised and hasn't splurged millions of pounds on named players. He's brought in players who he feels have been a good fit for the squad. So, yeah, it's going to be an intriguing game, that one on Sunday. Quite looking forward to watching it.
That's a hell of an atmosphere up there as well. Just to, we're all doom and gloom at the minute, Podders, but this will cheer you up. Frank Lampard is the first manager to lose 10 matches in a row while in charge of a top flight team since 1988. Well done, Frank. let's get on to the stats. We'll do Arsenal first and then we'll do Chelsea. 16 shots for us, 7 for them, 10 shots on target for us, 4 for them, 55% possession for us, 45% for them, 543 passes for the home side, the away mob, 455, 86% pass accuracy, as opposed to 84%. Zenith Coins, our partners who make exceptional coinage collectibles. We will give you a code for that in 15% you will be getting for that in a minute with our other partners from manscaped.com. Who is the Zenith Coins player of the match, Lauren?
It's a tough one. I think Odegaard, for me, it's a flip of the coin, no pun intended, between...
Hey, I like what you did there. That was good. That will please the guys back at Zenith.
Flip of the coin between Odegaard and Xhaka. I think they both had exceptional games, and they both... Obviously, Odegaard got the two goals, but I think Xhaka was crucial in all three goals, and yeah... Either or would have been a worthy player of the match, in my opinion.
What about you, Paul?
I wouldn't disagree at all with what Lovin said there in the analysis who the best players were. I throw in Trossard. I think Trossard's really good, and maybe doesn't quite get the recognition other players do from time to time.
Yeah, I think it's Odegaard for me, but I will mention Jorginho, who I thought was exceptional against his old club, and he was nice and tidy. After he got over the initial blip, he was very on the money, as we say. Let's just skip back to the Wolfsburg game. Player of the match for that one.
Ooh. Yeah, for me, probably Stina Blackstenius. She barely put a foot wrong. She came off with a bit of an injury. But, you know, Katie McCabe also, just to give her a shout, captained a very bare-bone team. There was about 10 players at the end of it who were still able to walk. It's getting desperate now, but no, I thought Stina Blackstenius was definitely the player of the match there.
It's got so bad, I'm starting to feel aches and pains just watching it. I think, I've pulled something. Just getting a cup of tea. Let's clear up then, Podders. We've got a few bits left, and we'll let the guys go. People moaning about not having the sort of depth to the squad. Wrighty's just come out and said a couple of days ago, he can see what they're doing. Edu is saying his phone is ringing off the hook. He's very confident about the caliber of players that they're going to sign. If you're going to challenge this City team, you're going to have to come correct. I like that. It's a bit sort of street, isn't it? You're going to have to come correct. Ideally, we want to finish as high as we can. We want to win it, but I'm excited to see the next phase. And that's what it is. It's been done in phases. Yes, we're a bit impatient because we've had a smell of success, but there's still phases to go through, Paul, isn't there? We're building slowly. Pep Guardiola never did it overnight.
No, and he spent an enormous amount of money as well to get where he was. We're suppressed, never seen to pick up on for some reason. But yeah, I mean, from the City point of view,
it's that old plastic bag, isn't it? To the FA,
you're backed by one of the richest states in the world. You buy the best players in the world. You buy a squad of about 30, and then you wonder why you're going to have success. But in terms of Arsenal, I think this summer's crucial, isn't it? Because made so much progress, unexpected progress this season as well. Arteta creates a real identity about the team, got lots of young, exciting players in the team who have grown up in their first team with him as the manager. They know what he wants from him. He knows what he wants from them. Yeah, but just this summer, squad depth, I think you've seen this season, that's particularly in defence, squad depth is going to be crucial in the next stage of Arsenal development. But if we'd been on this pod this time last season, I mean, we'd have said, well, next year you're going to finish second and you're going to be challenged for the lead title, so don't be too concerned. Everyone would have, no, you're sort of rubbish there, mate. What are you on about? So I think it's just a measure of the progress that Arteta's achieved. The fans are behind them. And I think at times last season, we got the impression not all the fans were behind them. Given the fact he's the youngest manager in the Premier League, which is something else that doesn't get brought up that often, the future looks really, really bright. If he's given the resources that he needs, if Edu can identify the players that he needs, then you can anticipate continued success next season. At the very least, you're guaranteed to finish ahead of Tottenham anyway.
Well, the Romford Pele has also gone into the mix because he reckons that Declan Rice will be wearing an Arsenal shirt and he's been talking to Edu. I can't even say his name now. it's just the excitement of getting Declan Rice. We had as well Kevin Campbell, the legend that is Kevin Campbell, works on that other mob, the Highbury squad, but we'll give him a mention because we're not snobby here. We'll say hello to everyone.
He's one of my heroes, Kevin Campbell.
Yeah, and Everton boy as well, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. Changed our destiny when we're heading for relegation toward the end of the 90s. Yeah, great player.
Yeah, he's a good lad as well. He said, do you know what I'm seeing against the better teams, Lauren? This is one of those ones where you have to pick the bones out of it. Against the better teams, we need more speed in the position that Granit Xhaka's in. That's the difference. I thought Xhaka had a good game, talking about the Chelsea game. But when you look at the growth of our team, we need someone as an alternative who has some speed, who can make a difference offensively. Xhaka is a quality player, but he's a bit one-paced against Manchester City. The levels are different, and we need players who are going to hurt them, Campbell said.
Mm.
You agree?
You know, one thing I would say to that is let's see how Smith Rowe comes back, you know, once his injuries settle down, and hopefully next season he'll start getting runs out, because I think that's the exact type of player that we need. Someone who's young, someone who's dynamic, and someone who can also be offensive in a way that Xhaka isn't. We saw it from him last season in the Premier League. We know he's capable of it. He just needs to. It has to be an issue of fitness at this stage, really.
He's going anywhere. Lots of speculation, Aston Villa having making a bid and all that sort of thing in the summer. But I don't think he's a Haylin boy. He's not going to go anywhere, and we still need him.
He's so valuable to us last season, and I really genuinely believe it's just Arteta protecting him and making sure that he doesn't suffer any longer term injuries the same way that maybe Jack Wilshere did, you know, too much too soon for someone so young. But look, I think that's another option that people often forget about. So let's see how far we can get him, if we can get him up to speed during pre-season, and then maybe reassess then and see if we need to get anyone else in.
Yeah, very good point about Jack Wilshere, because we played him when we shouldn't have. A bit similar, I mean, we're getting off the subject, but Koscielny, we used to get him injured and then bring him back because we had no one else. I'm glad they're taking their time with Saliba. We don't want him permanently cropped on a regular basis. I think Koscielny was glad to leave Arsenal in case he got another injury. I mean, he even opened his locker and did something to his thumb. He was that prone to it. Now, Paul, Pep Guardiola is getting on my nerves. He is. Not just because he's the manager of Manchester City. He sounded a bit condescending, a bit pompous. He said, after 7 years about Arsenal, they have won the most important title, qualification for the Champions League, financially for signings. I'm pretty sure they would be so happy because they're doing an amazing job. Now, is he being a bit arrogant there? Is he popping the old tongue in the cheek, or should we be offended? I was offended, to be honest.
No, it's a bit of risk coming from a manager who's never won the Champions League with Manchester City as well. But
ding.
Yeah, it is condescending, and I think that's just the way he is, isn't it? I'm quite bristled at that from an Arsenal perspective. I suppose as well, because Mikel Arteta was his assistant. Maybe that's kind of, you know, that's kind of how he views it. You know, my little apprentice has done quite well here. But yeah, it was quite condescending.
Yeah, right. Just a couple of bits to do, and it's the promotions. We've got zenithcoins.com and manscaped.com. We're offering you a 20% discount on the performance package 4.0 from Manscaped. The ultimate above and below the waist grooming experience. Go there and pop in the code ARS03 for 15% off the excellent Zenith coins. Actually, Manscaped, I've got the pants on. Very comfortable. Make a note of that. You get that in a little bag as well with all your gubbins. For 15% off Zenith coins, Arsenal collectibles, including the Clock End edition. Absolutely brilliant. You've got to go there and drop in the code ARS71. They've got some stuff in the pipeline that I can't tell you about, and it's really annoying me. But it's going to cost money. That's why it's going to cost a lot of money for you and me. Just to mention the remaining games before you go, everyone. The Gunners Pub, the match shown in there live if you can't get tickets for the game. So it's well worth going down there. Great atmosphere, memorabilia, live music at the weekends. And why not have a burger? Rude not to. Those remaining games, Brighton at home, 14th of May at 16:30. Wolves on the 28th of May, 16:30. The girls are playing, Lauren, on Friday against Leicester at Meadow Park, 19:30, and it's on Sky Sports. Be there or be square.
Mm-hmm.
What's our chances? What are Leicester like for those who don't watch much of the games?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can remember, Leicester either dead bottom or just above relegation. It should be a win. Obviously, as we mentioned before, given injuries and lack of rotation. Oh, no, sorry, Leicester are actually 10th. They're just above relegation by 2 points. Look, we should be winning this game realistically. We have to push, give everything we have for Champions League spots. We can't accept anything less. It's the Arsenal women's team. They cannot accept anything less other than being in the Champions League. And obviously, you know, injuries need to be taken into account, but none of these players deserve to. The thing is, as well, there's only Champions League for the women's game, so there's no Europa League. It's Champions League or nothing, basically. And it's very, very important that that's secured. It's not out of our reach just yet, and we need to push and give absolutely everything we have left. We saw what we can do in the Wolfsburg game. We need to go into every game now going forward and leave exactly that much on the pitch as we did there, and hopefully the support's as good as it was for the Wolfsburg games as it is for the upcoming WSL game. Sorry, I can't speak anymore either.
That's because we're worn out. It's quite a period of time, isn't it? It's at least an hour, if not more.
Hopefully, you know, I'm hopeful we should get the 3 points there and keep pushing the likes of City, Chelsea and United for the three Champions League spots that are available.
Right, we've got the guys on Sunday at St James's Park. You want to see that 16:30 on Sky Sports. So our next few games are televised. Get behind the guys if you can't get a ticket, which there's some hoo-ha about the ticket allocation system. Lots of people missing out and lots of overcharging going on. But from us, thanks very much to Lauren. Enjoy Barcelona. We're catching up indeed. With the weather. It's not too bad at the minute.
Oh, yeah?
not as good as you, I dare say. What was the temperature over there today?
About 20 degrees. Not too bad.
Felt like cutting her off then. What you got lined up? You got another live football match? Where are you going? What are you doing? Who are you seeing?
Me? Or Paul? Sorry, I didn't miss that.
Yep, Paul. She's thinking about getting a tan. That's it's the suntan lotion has affected her hearing. She's got too much in there. What was that?
Yeah, but the next game, Brighton away on Monday, so be watching that on Sky Sports. Haven't checked the weekend's fixtures yet. If there's something going on locally, I'll try and get myself along there. But it's my wife's birthday this weekend, so the football might have to take a back step.
Happy birthday, Paul's wife. What's her name? Give her a plug while we're here.
Janet,
happy birthday, Janet. Podders, take care of yourselves. Thanks for tuning in. Please subscribe and thanks for the increased listener and viewership. Right, thanks, guys. Take care. See you soon.
Bye. Thanks, bye, guys. Love.
That's it. We're all done here. You can find us on most social media outlets, including Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. Please like, follow, or download the audio version, which is available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and Anchor, as well as a few more. Subscribe and follow the YouTube version of the show. My thanks to Silent Dave. You can find him on Twitter as SilentDave101. That's also the home of Jay as the Ball Gooner. Paul is at PMACCap, and Lauren is at LaurenD2710. Why don't you look up our brothers across the pond at the Arse Bros? That includes Nick. You've seen Nick. Everyone knows Nick. Thanks to Dave Miller at Arsenal Attic and Simon Deasy of Gunners for Life, which is twinned to the podcast. For all the latest Arsenal news, go to newsnow.co.uk or check out David Ornstein on Twitter or Charles Watts. Just another plug, Revolution, the Rise of Arteta's Arsenal by Charles Watts is published on August the 31st. Want to say hi, ask a question, it's an Arsenal thing for at gmail.com. The podcast was brought to you by manscaped.com and the Performance Package 4.0 for the best above and below the waist grooming experience. And also Zenith coins for the ultimate quality coin collectibles. Officially recognised products by Arsenal Football Club. Until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. And remember, North London was and always will be red. Ooh. Mm-hmm.